to Horror Hour.
We all go a little mad.
Oh, forget you.
Oh, Jesus, you're alive!
The dead.
Here's Johnny.
All right, hello, and welcome to the Horror Hour. It's a place we discuss, we debate, we disagree mostly on everything about horror. And today, I'm really excited. Well, I'm one of the co-hosts, Yutaka, joined by Liam.
Hello.
And a special correspondent, Mara Magel.
Hello.
And we're here with, which I'm really excited, we have the writers of Scream 5 and Scream 6, Guy Busick and Jamie Vanderbilt. How are you all?
Doing great.
Doing great. Hello.
So we're just going to really, now that Scream 5 has already been out and we've seen all the fun stuff come about it, we're going to chat about that, hopefully maybe a little bit about 6. And then again, what you all have going, you know, next, even though I think somebody's got Final Destination, so we might have to talk about that too.
I will say what I can.
Yes.
So I guess my first question then, has everything wrapped for you guys?
Oh, on Scream 6? Yeah, we just wrapped.
So I do have to ask, is there a sigh of relief now, or is there still just, you got more that you still got to do, or?
Yeah, I always think there's a sigh of relief, just in terms of getting it in the can. It's a movie, we're really happy with it, and getting Radio Silence and William Sherrick back into LA. I think everyone's just we're happy that we're at this point.
Yeah, completely agree. Very, very excited. I had the privilege of going to set for a couple of weeks on this one. I was not able to go for the last one because of COVID restrictions, but I got to go up and I like what I saw. I'm very happy. Of course, once you get to the finish line and you wrap principal, then it is a huge sigh of relief, but it's like, yeah, we got it. We got what we need. We know there's a movie there. And next steps are always really exciting. And I'm just on pins and needles waiting for that first cut.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, how involved are you, in the filming process? Are you being sent rewrites, or what is that like for you after you've written it and they're filming it?
There's a constant text chain going around. Basically, it's things happening on the day that need adjusting, or like we need a new couplet here or something like that. Really minor, though. I mean, it's not like we're getting sent big changes once shooting starts. And I'm kind of shocked that, how they go through different colors of pages with every major rewrite. And generally you get to like the 18th color in line. Not too many colors on this. By the time we got the script locked
double
down,
chartreuse, sir. Yeah.
I think we only made it to pink, which is the second color.
Did we only get to pink?
Yeah, I know.
Amazing, actually. That might be a first.
I mean, there were a billion rewrites before that, but like, once we got the script locked down.
Usually a million during.
Rails. It's totally easy. No.
I also think that the thing, that I feel like as a writer, we're sort of very lucky with these movies is we're all friends. We've all known each other. We've all worked together before Scream. So there's a level of trust and kind of shorthand. And so, Guy and I are never worried they're going to bring in other writers after us. The directors are never like precious about, like, if anyone has sort of thoughts or issues, it's just best idea wins. And so it's a very collaborative situation. And we've all been in the foxhole together before. We all sort of trust each other and are able to, have, if there are ever any sort of creative differences, have those conversations before the day, so that by the time, they get on the floor with the actors, it'll be stuff like, hey, we need a line, if someone is walking somewhere before they get to the action, we need a line before that just to come in on. So it's stuff like that rather than, oh no, we need to change the way the second act ends,
That's fascinating.
It really is. So mine's a little bit of a backtrack to when yous very first found out yous were writing Scream. Sorry, the dog's biting me hand.
Not for you, I'm sorry about your hand.
What was the first thing that popped into your head when you found out you had gotten it?
I can go and then Guy can go because we had different sort of situations with it. So I have a company called Project X, which along with William Sherrick and Paul Neinstein are producing it. So we found out sort of, and our friends, and forgive me if this is a little bit of a longer answer. We knew Gary Barber, who ran Spyglass, and we knew that Gary was going to do something with the property of Scream. And so we basically went in and made the pitch of, we would love to be the ones to do this. And I have, you know, that first movie and that first screenplay meant so much to me and means so much to me. And when that movie came out, I was in college trying to be a screenwriter. And Kevin's script is so, you know, Wes is incredible and was so wonderful, but Kevin's script is so incredible and really sort of, you know, was like this masterclass of, I'm going to deconstruct a genre while also being the best example of the genre, while reviving a genre and writing what I would say is maybe one of the best mystery plots in the last 50 years. Like it's, I think the mystery component to that first Scream stands up against anything Agatha Christie ever did. It's so wonderfully plotted. And so, you know, as a, just as a fan, I, you know, really, really wanted to do it. And Gary Barber, you know, trusted William and Paul, known forever, and sort of looked at me and sort of said, you know, I'll do it if you write it. And I was like, okay. And I was like, okay. And we walked out of the office and got in the elevator. And I turned to my partners. I was like, did we just get Scream? Like, did that, it was like, it happened that way. And I knew, we all knew we really wanted to get into it as quickly as possible. And I knew I really wanted to write it with someone. And usually I don't, Guy and I, you know, Guy is sort of my first writing partner. Usually I write sort of on my own, and Guy had written a lot of stuff on his own as well. But I really sort of wanted to be with someone who I knew cared about the franchise as much as I did. And so I cleared that with everyone else. And then I called Guy up and then I let Guy take it from there.
Yeah, that's one of those phone calls you never forget. You know, it was the easiest yes of my entire career. And I'll always remember exactly where I was standing, what time it was. It was just crazy. It was just, I thought he was calling with bad news about one of our other many projects together that he was producing and I was a writer on. And it was the opposite. And it was something I would never have predicted in a billion years. And like Jamie, that first Scream movie was such a formative movie for me. I was not really a horror guy until Scream. Like I could appreciate it, I watched it, but that was the one that kind of blew the doors off the whole thing and made me realize, oh, you can have characters that are well-rounded, you actually care about, you can have humor, it can feel like a roller coaster, it doesn't have to be a grim gore fest. It was just very mind-expanding. And as I always say, like you can draw a straight line between Scream and Ready or Not, you know, in terms of the tone and the feel and the pace and things like that. So yeah, hugely, hugely influential. And I was, you know, Kevin Williamson was one of my writing heroes as well. So from there, I mean, in terms of the first things we thought about, our process was we sat down together as soon as we agreed to do this, watched the first four movies and wrote kind of a wish list of like, okay, we're Scream fans. And, you know, we're going to be the stewards moving forward of this next installment. So like, what do we want to see? And who are our favorite characters and what elements do we want to bring back? What characters do we want to bring back? Where is it set? All that kind of stuff. And we just kind of wrote separately on our notepads and things. And then at the end of that, we're like, all right, let's compare notes. And we were really hoping we're on the same page. And it was everything lined up almost exactly. We'd written down pretty much the exact same things. And we're like, okay, this is going to work. So we knew that we were passing the torch. We knew that the OG cast was going to be in a supporting role this time. But we wanted to tell a story that included all of them, if we could get them. So we were like, if we write it, they will come. just hoped and prayed. And we wanted to see them all in a different place in their lives. You know, we wanted to see that 10 years had passed since Scream 4. So what are these characters up to? These beloved characters, which, by the way, it's never not surreal to write Gale or Sydney or Dewey and then dialogue underneath it. It's like, what is my life? How did this happen? How did I get here? And we just kind of took off from there. The mystery in terms of like who are the suspects, who are the main characters, who did it, it came pretty quickly. And the theme of it, like the why now, how does this earn its right to be a Scream movie and part of this beloved franchise, that came fairly early too. We wanted to talk about requels, we wanted to talk about toxic fandom, and we felt like these are relevant things in film and film culture. And we just it was off to the races from there.
Yeah, what is that pressure like writing for these characters, like you said, that are so important to so many people? And how did you find that voice? Because you pretty much nailed it. I mean, they were the supporting role, but Dewey's lines felt like stuff Dewey would say. And same with the other characters.
That's really great to hear. I mean, I'll let Jamie take this one.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think we probably would have the same answer. It's just, I think we first of all, are truly fans of all of the movies. And one of the things Guy and I talked about really early was, we wanted this to be a sequel to all of the movies, not just the first one. And so that's why we, you know, brought Judy Hicks back. That's why we, but it's, you know, because we love them so much, I think we just really worked hard to make sure that those voices were clear and you know, sounded like them on the page. And then also, you know, having, you know, the real actors come in and do it doesn't hurt. You know, I mean, nobody can, you know, deliver a Dewey line like David Arquette, you know, and I'm sure there was some stuff. I know that, you know, there were a couple moments where Nev would go, no, this is shorter. This is a little, take this word out, take that word out. Sydney would say like that. And that's great. Like, that's what you want, you know, in situations like that, is actors who've had such connection to these characters for so long, telling you, oh, I really like this, but I think that I would say it this way. It's like, perfect, say it that way. And the director, I mean, and a big part of that too is Radio Silence, the directors were completely on board with that as well. They're huge fans of the franchise as well. So like, we all sort of came at this from a place of fandom and love, and wanting to get all of those characters correct. And then also wanting to create characters that felt like they lived in the same universe as Sydney and Gail and Dewey.
Yeah, and to answer the other part of your question, the pressure was enormous. It was not something we took lightly. Like, we sat down and it was kind of a yay, and also what did we just agree to do? Because we didn't want to mess it up for the fans, and we didn't want to mess it up for ourselves because we're fans. And I think we were oddly protective of it too. And it was like, well, at least we know if we're doing it with love and respect for what came before and for the fans and for Wes and for Kevin. And everybody involved, but we just took it really, really seriously. I know we do for every project that we do, but this one was particularly special to us.
Yeah, and the last thing I will say too is I think that we, you know, we were careful with it, but I also sort of feel like I've been in situations on movies where, you know, people are very scared to mess up the IP, and I've always sort of felt like fear is a little bit the death of creativity. Like, you can't be, you know, if you're nervous about, oh God, I hope I don't fuck this up, I hope I don't, you're closing off the opportunity to come up with really great ideas. So a lot of this was more about, you know, rather than, oh, we're gonna resurrect the franchise, it is, we're gonna get one shot at this. We're gonna look at this as if you only get to make one Scream movie, and oh my God, I can't believe we get to make a Scream movie, what do we wanna see? Like, let's just leave it all out on the field. We're going to take some risks. We're going to do some stuff that might not be popular, but that's better than tiptoeing through this and just trying not to offend any.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I love that. And I guess I'm kind of curious then too, because you nailed the toxic fandom in general. In any big franchise, they all have them. And so I thought that was done really well. I would love to know, with five, what were your favorite scenes to write or see come to life? Because, I mean, I know mine, but I'm just curious as to yours.
Go, Guy.
Yeah, I have a favorite. Because I took the first crack at it, and it didn't really change that much. The Dewey and Gail reunion scene.
Yeah.
Knowing these characters so well for four movies, and knowing that we had separated them and that Dewey had fallen on hard times, and that we had to come up with the backstory of when and how and why did they separate, and, you know, bringing in all the real life stuff too, which we knew the actors would, it was a privilege to write that, and then to see the dailies of it, and then to see the final cut of it, it was it just gives me chills to think I was, you know, I was able to contribute to the lore of those two beloved characters in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I love that scene. And also sort of guy in my process too was, you know, we sort of broke the movie to, you know, together and then, you know, sort of beat it all out and knew what the movie was. And then there would be certain things where like, I'd like to try that first. Do you mind if I try? Okay, then I want to try this. And so that's how we kind of broke it up. And so for me, the one that I really loved doing, and I think I took the first swing at that was the opening. Just writing a Scream opening was super fun. And knowing kind of that we had the fastball that she lived at the end. Like that was it was just sort of really exciting to try and twist that and then to use, you know, Stab movie trivia as the trivia and that like the meta upon meta starts early in the movie. And then all of the sort of the technological stuff as well was super fun. Some of that was actually in another place in the movie. We pulled it up into the front, but that one for me. And then I got to say, and Guy and I both took huge whacks, just the stuff in the house, the whole third act is just, you know, running around the Mocker house is so much fun. The basement stuff.
Oh, my I was going to say.
That scene, I don't think changed a line. And the most wonderful thing was when we turned in the first draft and Kevin read it, he was like, don't let anyone take this scene out of the movie. Like, he's like, this is Scream. Don't let anyone fuck with the scene. He's like, because you don't need it.
Yeah, it doesn't advance plot.
Story-wise, it doesn't advance, you know, which he's absolutely right. It doesn't. He's like, don't let anyone touch it. So, yeah.
I believe we kind of improv that scene. I think that, like, we wrote it in person before we went to script. Because we had a really, really long process of just sitting in a room together and going scene by scene. And we just, like, throw out dialogue.
Yep.
And Jamie would write it longhand.
I was sure. Okay.
And we would just go back and forth as the characters, as Amber and Mindy in that scene. And I don't think it really changed much from that day. Mm-hmm. We basically transcribed your notes into the scene and then it just lived like that. Mm-hmm. And I think I generally play Mindy. I just love the character of Mindy.
I definitely is the Mindy vibe.
Yeah. She's
and I do by default play Amber, who's named after my wife. So
exactly.
Yutaka, was that your favorite scene?
That
the one you were going to say?
It was absolutely.
Mine too. It's mine too.
That's awesome.
It's so good.
Yeah, same
thank
way.
You.
It when that scene happened, I was just like, oh shit, this is exactly what I expected. And but I still wasn't sure how it was going to turn out. But I mean, I love Jasmine Savoy Brown.
Yeah.
I heart Mindy so much. But that scene was just so the tension, but also the comedy. Loved it.
Oh, thank you.
The tension and then it just is so reminiscent and builds in the way that I feel like is very rare that even though the sequels are all great, we haven't really seen that kind of energy since like the first or mm-hmm. second one. And it and then on rewatches, it pays off even more, honestly.
It does. Yeah. It's great.
It's pretty amazing. Mint makes it out of that basement alive, but...
Thank God she does. Yeah. There would have been riots.
We love Jasmine as well. And,
Mikey's so great.
And holy cow, Mikey's great. Yeah. She went full Billy Loomis in that third act. Did. Just really went for it, as did Jack.
The great thing about being able to make another one is that we get to, but there was definitely a moment where we were like, oh man, it's the whole crew can't come back, you know? So it's like, oh, we're not gonna have Jack and Mikey on this one. Okay. You know?
Moles was sad about Jack because I also loved Jack, but it's fine. So obviously with all the writing and everything like that, how did it come together that yous would kill off Dewey?
It was something we talked about really early on, and it was it was something that, you know, and Guy, correct me if my memory is wrong about this, but that we both, when we sort of were taking notes first, we sort of, there were certain things that we both independently came to. Ridiculously, amazingly, we both came to the idea of a protagonist that was Billy's daughter. like mm-hmm. independently. And we both came to the idea of doing the third act in the Mocker House, and we both came to the idea of losing Dewey. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that, and again, I love all of the movies, but there's in 3 and 4, there's sort of this sense that the trio is sort of safe and we're gonna knock off the fresh meat. And for me, the most shocking moment in the entire franchise is Randy dying in 2. Has always been sort yeah. of that, holy shit, and any everything is on the table. Because Randy back then was my favorite character, and you know, sort of was the mouthpiece for the film geek, which I certainly was, and Guy was at that age too. We knew each other when that movie came out. We've known each other a long time. And so I think we sort of felt like we needed to do something like that to really sort of sell that everyone was in danger. We felt that, you know, he's such a beloved character. He's, you know, our favorite character that, it's sort of, there's this sort of, you know, this phrase in screenwriting, which is you have to kill your darlings. And this was a little bit of that. And so it was a difficult decision, but it was also, it kept feeling like the right decision. And it sort of is the, once we realized that we have these two sort of separate problems too, and Guy, jump in wherever you want to, but like we knew that we wanted the movie to take place in Woodsboro. We knew that Sidney Prescott would never go to Woodsboro. Like, I remember seeing like stuff online, like, well, Sidney was the counselor at the high school. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, would you ever set foot in that town again? And so we had this issue of how do we get Sidney back? And we realized, and we also had this sort of situation of we felt like one of the big three had to go. And we realized the only thing that would bring Sidney back would be something like that. And once those two things fell into place, we just went that makes sense.
Yeah, we did decide that early, and then it always, no matter how much we would second guess it, it always felt like the right answer. And we wanted to just make sure, you know, because as Jamie mentioned, this is our favorite character in the franchise at this point. And Dewey was always my favorite character, and he feels like kind of the heart of the whole thing. And, you know, if you're going to get the emotional reaction from the audience and the investment from the audience that you want at that stage of the movie, that was, you know, the correct choice. And another thing that made us feel a little bit safer about, not safe at all, but like feel a little bit more confident about it, I should say, we haven't really touched on, is that Kevin Williamson was involved from the beginning on this movie and on the subsequent movie that we just wrapped. He was the godfather of this whole thing. This all sprung from his brain. And so he shepherded this. He read every draft. We would sit in a room and go page by page, line by line. This is Scream. This is not Scream. And he was invaluable. And he was on board. Mm-hmm. And he basically, his sort of credo was, it's a slasher movie. People die. And, you know, it's as Jamie said, like when it starts to feel safe, you're dead. You know, so it was a stakes thing. It was a, you know, edge of your seat thing, keep you invested thing. It was just, it checked so many boxes, and it was still one of the most painful decisions as a creative person, as a writer that I've ever been through. And I know same for Jamie, and like, we were not happy about it. it was very, very difficult. And, you know, it'll probably haunt me for the rest of my days, but I, as a storytelling point, I feel like I stand by it completely. Emotionally, I'm a wreck because of it.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, you mentioned that when you were doing the first one, you went all in as if this was your only movie, but I imagine you had to have had some sort of idea for, because obviously you're done a sequel. Did you have plans or ideas that you guys had for future movies when making that first one?
Speaking for myself, I think there was nothing planned that we put into the fifth movie. Like, again, it was very much wanted to be a self-contained. Does your brain noodle? Absolutely. I know that Guy and I never really had a conversation. Again, it was sort of like the separate pads. It's like, well, maybe we have an idea for another one. All right, well, if we get to another one, maybe we'll talk about it, you know? So for me, not really. I mean, and again, that's the process in this one has been, on six has been, all right, if we get one more shot at this, what's everything we want to put in it? And what, you know, I just think we constantly, if we get to make these, we want to continue to sort of leave it on the field. I'm not always a fan of the, well, if you wait three movies, there'll be a payoff. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, I've also been involved in movies where you know, people will say that, and then you don't get to make another movie because, yep. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, wait till part three. It ain't going to be a part three. So, you know, I think just in terms of that, but I think we had maybe little vague notions, but nothing super concrete until we really started to, until we all as a group decided, okay, we think we can make another one. What should it be about? Guy, do you think that's true, or did you have the whole thing in your
head? No. That's completely true. Because you don't want your heart broken. You know? Once you get really invested in an idea for the sequel, and we didn't know how this movie was going to do. We didn't know how the fans were going to react, or the box office in general, how that was going to go. Are people going to care about this franchise 11 years after the last installment? No one knew. And so, yeah, we would have, you know, our separate notebooks, and we would make little, jot down little notes throughout the making of the writing of Five even. But there were never any real conversations. And then it was just, again, such a bizarre experience that we were like, okay, we're having our first meeting on the next one. And because it looked like there was going to maybe be a next one, or at least a script for a next one. And we had that first, I think it was a Zoom meeting on that one. We were like, okay, I've got my ideas and you've got your ideas, and we haven't really talked. And I went first, and I was like, okay, here's what I think about the opening sequence of this one. Here are some of the big sort of ideas of it, movements of it. And then Jamie like holds up his pad and he's writing the same. It was just insane. It was like we had some kind of mind meld going on.
Share a screen brand somehow.
And these are big swings too. These are not like safe beats. It was like, oh, we're really gonna have fun with this time. We're really gonna deviate. Because we feel like we paid homage to the previous movies in the last one, as we should. And we wanted to remind people, you know, why you like Scream. And so we did lean on some of those things that we knew fans would like, while shaking things up a bit too. And, you know, by killing Dewey, by having Billy come back and actually having Skeet and things like that, some of the bigger swings. And now we feel like, all right, let's get a little crazy with this next one. Let's do something a little bit different.
Careful, guy.
I so want to say more, but I just feel really excited.
But a red light goes on in his room.
Yeah, or a red light appears on my forehead as the spyglass and Paramount Sniper comes to get me. No, I'm
they
really
split
excited.
A sniper,
about it.
By the way, they both paid for half.
He's on retainer. So yeah, I'm just excited because I do think that we're going to do some things that are unexpected and things that Scream fans will love. We're never going to stray too far from the DNA of what makes this thing great. We're not stupid, but we're having some fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I'm really excited because I will say, while 5 might have had maybe the lowest death count, the brutality though was so much, and I love that, by the way. So I was all in, like that. I was just like, damn, wasn't expecting that. So I am, if you're able to, are we going to still see more of that brutality and maybe a little bit more carnage?
I'm not gonna say anything. No, because I also sort of feel like when people are like, well, expect the unexpected, and it's like, okay, well now I expect the unexpected. It's like, no, I expect
that's fair.
I don't. What I will say about 5 though, and you know, a big thing that, you know, Guy and I actually haven't talked about a lot, is one of the big briefs for us and for Radio Silence was, we have to make this scary again. You know, it's bringing it back 11 years later. And literally people would be like, oh, you're doing like another scary movie? Like, no, this is the thing that scary movie, like, because people, you know, I mean, if you're, you know, 18 years old, you didn't grow up with this. The last
this
movie
came
out when you were 9. So making this Scream 5, and listen, I'm not gonna, Scream 6, also scary. Like, it's not a spoiler. We want it to be scary as well. But making Scream 5 scary and establishing Ghostface as a real horror, reestablishing Ghostface as a real horror villain, not as opposed to what Scream 4, 3 or 2 did, but just in terms of pop culture and reminding people, you know, that it's not a joke, that it's not, you know, It's not the wacky mask with the, you know, it's was really important to us. And we talked a lot with Radio Silence about that in terms of, you know, the kill scenes, in terms of the brutality, in terms of, you know, and also differentiating it. Like in Five, like, the, you know, the, I think it was the stunt team came up with this sort of idea of the double sort of stab maneuver, like giving our killers a little a little differentiation from the ones that went before. The fact that a lot of the kills are faster, like that they're not as drawn out, that they're not as sort of run, you know, there's not as much sort of chasing, it's big, you know, was a big thing for us. So all of that was really intentional in terms of trying to make the franchise scary again. But look, you look at Scream 4, you see Olivia's guts, like on the there's, you know, Wes took some fucking swings with that stuff. You know, and he and you know, Matt and Tyler would always sort of talk about this quote of his that Kevin had told us of when they were making the first one with the whole Drew sequences. He said, "I want the audience to feel like they're in the hands of a madman. That anything can happen at any time." He's like, "I want to establish that early, so that you're afraid anything can happen." And that was a big deal to us when we were making that movie and this upcoming movie too.
Yeah, as the one who has visited the set, I can confirm, very scary. Very, very pleased with the level of scary, I'll say that.
Oh, God. I love a good scare.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I remember being in theaters, seeing Scream 1 when it came out, and I do remember that opening sequence. And that whole process and just the blood leave my body. So I'm happy to hear that because I still, there were certain sequences in Five where I was like, oh, I was not prepared. Like, and it was a press screening. So there were like maybe only six other people in the theater. And I'm like, am I allowed to laugh? Am I allowed to like jump? Like what's going on? And then now I'm like, I'm watching this scary film and there's like no one really in here and it's freaking me out even more. So kudos.
Thank you.
That's nice to hear.
The whole Wes and Judy Hicks scene. Oh, that one is so good too. That's so good. It's so good. It was painful to watch, but it was so good.
Thank you. And I gotta give credit to the directors on that. The whole thing with the doors with Wes, like, you know, being obscured and thinking that Ghostface is behind the fridge door, the cabinet door, the front door, all that. They completely came up with that in the space, and it really amped up the tension of that sequence because it was going to be scary and suspenseful anyway, but having that device was so fun, and you're just sure it's here, you're sure it's here, and it's not, and then it's the last place you expect, right behind you. A testament to their brilliance.
Absolutely.
But a testament to yours as well with the, in the car, Judy, when Judy was talking on the phone, absolutely hilarious, and it was just so funny. Like, I'm a fan of musicals, just hilarious.
Well, and Marley is so great. Yes. And you know, we loved her in Four, and she's playing a slightly bigger, you know, kind of puppy dog version of the character, and we wanted to give her something different to play too. Like, she's older, she's a parent, she's now got this responsibility of being the sheriff of Woodsboro. You know, she took over for Dewey once Dewey kind of fell out, and she just nailed it. You know, we had confidence in these performers, and bringing back Heather Matarazzo for Martha Meeks as well was another thing that was important to us. It was like we know they're going to bring it, and they all did, and it was just such a wonderful, fulfilling thing to see. It was like, yes, these are the characters, and they're back, and it feels like Scream, and we love it. So, kudos to all the performers, new and returning.
And Heather, too, just to sort of say it, like, you know, we shot that movie in August of 2020. We were, I mean, height of pandemic, pre-vaccine. We were Paramount's first new movie that they started after everything had shut down. So with all of the COVID protocols, Heather had to fly to Wilmington, North Carolina, quarantine for a number of days, test for a number of days, to then shoot for half a day. You know what I mean? Like, taking like almost a week and a half out of her life just to do one scene. And also, we, you know, the production had to pay for all of that. And we kept going, no, you have to pay. We have to have Heather in this movie. Trust us. trust us, this is going to matter to the fans. And she came and just knocked it out of the park. Like, it was such a wonderful, you know, it's so, it was so fun watching, seeing the movie in theaters with audiences. Whenever she would walk in, the people who realized who she was, it just, the whole room lit up. So it was just, that stuff was super, super important to us.
Oh yeah, I definitely squealed. I'm British, so I squealed quietly.
No, listen, to people in the room. You were looking for squeals.
I did squeal it out there when she appeared on screen. So
that's what we wanted. Heather's the best.
So I know you're probably just going to say no because the snipers is looking. Sniper. But is there a little bit of tea? Anything you can give us for what's to come?
No. Yeah. One of the things the thing I will say, not about the movie, but just about, it's like, I know it stinks, but there's something to me so wonderful about that we don't get to do anymore with movies. Usually it is walking into the theater. I sort of had this experience with Nope. I thought they did such a wonderful job of holding so much back that I went and sat down for that movie and realized as it started, I didn't really know almost anything. And that is, as much as I can protect that experience with these movies for people. So it's sort of the, you know, I want you to have, you know, your Christmas gift on Christmas Day. You know what I mean? Yeah. The whole thing. So as much as it sort of sucks to not be like, oh, let's tease this or tease that. It's part of the fun of these movies, I think, is sort of unwrapping them when it's the proper time.
So as long as you've wrote into the script that Gail's fringe needs to come back. <that's fine.
laughs> talk to Courtney. That's a Courtney. You think I get to tell Courtney what to do with her hair? You're out of your mind.
Speaking of past characters and all of that, how do you decide what characters are needed for the next movie? Like, how do you decide which ones you need, and how are you gonna, you know, how you're gonna get them all to the same location? What's that process like?
That was I think in this case of five, and we can't obviously talk about six, but it was, well, this is about 10 years later in Woodsboro, who would be there? And there were characters from the other four movies that we wanted to bring back because we like so many of the performances. And granted, so few characters survived their movies. It's not a deep well of people that can come back. But we had some people. And I think I can say we are fans of the Kirby Reed character. And we were like, it'd be really cool. And again, approaching it in the fifth one as if this is our only one, we're like, let's just try to fit in everything that we would love. And then it just organically, we didn't have room, you know, there was too much plot to service. There were three storylines. And so there was no way. But that was someone that was on the table. We were like, well, we really like Hayden and we really like this character. Yeah. And so it just has to make sense. It has to make sense for the time, it has to make sense for the place, it has to make sense for where the characters are in their lives emotionally. And otherwise it just feels like it's shoehorned. And we don't want it to, obviously there's a lot of fan service because we're fans, but we don't want it to feel like fan service. We want it to feel like that makes sense for the story. And so Martha Meeks being the mother of two of our teenage characters, it made perfect sense for her to show up in the movie. Same thing with Judy Hicks, with Marley, that she was established as being a deputy in four. So she would be the sheriff in five. And she also has a connection to the new killings because she has a son. Otherwise you start to throw in people from, you know, it's like, we love Joel from two. We love people like that. But it's like, now it's just an Easter egg. You know, we don't want Easter eggs for the sake of Easter eggs, unless it's something in the background that you can find, you know, when you pause a frame or whatever. But we don't want to distract from the story. And at a certain point it's like, well, now you're just being cute. So we're really careful about that. And, I think the other one obviously was Skeet. It was like, wow, man, it's just like everyone talks about, as they should, you know, Sydney, Dewey and Gail and Randy from the first one. But man, Billy and Stu are so much of the part of why that's a brilliant movie and why it was such a success. Like, those two performances are legendary. And the idea that, you know, we had come to that, like, what if Billy had an illegitimate daughter, which actually tracked with the character, because the whole movie he's trying to sleep with Sydney and she's saying no.
Desperately trying to sleep with her, yes.
It's like, well, we can actually, you know, headcanon wise, we can make sense of that. Mm-hmm. And we're like, man, wouldn't it be great though to have Skeet back? And we just kept kind of laughing about it, like, oh man, that would be great. Let's actually talk about that. Yeah. What's Skeet up to these days?
Yeah,
you know, like I wonder how he'd feel about it. But that was a big one for us early on. It was like, yeah, let's try it. And I think Kevin said early on, like, this is the one thing in your script that does not feel like a Scream movie, and that's why you absolutely have to do it. And we were like, all right.
He was like, take the swing.
And we knew we could take it out, but once we shot it, there were people that were, you know, a little apprehensive about the idea of it, but once everybody saw it, it was like, oh yeah, it totally works. And we were thrilled. And Skeet's lovely, and it was just like, oh my God, we get to see Billy Loomis again after a fashion as this construct of his daughter who's, you know, got some issues.
Yeah. But it all sort of fed to that story, you know, and I think also we were really interested in, you know, Sam's story of someone who left home, who's got to go back to that town. It was really important for that town to have its own characters and have its own life and its own continuity from the other movies. So like I said, Martha being there, Judy being sheriff now, we knew Dewey was still going to be there, but not the sheriff, that there was going to be sort of a life within Woodsboro. And then there was the thing that she was haunted by that came from Woodsboro, which was Skeet. So all of that sort of led to who we wanted to bring back into the movie, as opposed to the, you know, the tail wagging the dog.
Okay, so different question. Along that lines, if you could bring back any character that has died from a past franchise or past episode.
Sorry, go on.
Who would you bring back?
I have to jump on the grenade you just threw in front of Guy. I can't answer that question. The reason is because then you're going to go, well, maybe they're bringing him back.
That's very true. Yeah.
Or they're definitely not. Well,
yeah. Great question.
Yeah. Oh man, I wish I could answer. And Jamie knows exactly
what I know exactly what you're gonna say. That's what you can't.
Yeah.
Parker Posey. I know that's who I want back.
The sound bite would just go everywhere. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
You know what? Well, here's the really politic answer to the question is, God, those movies were so well cast, right? I mean, like, everybody was so, like, Wes put so many different incredible young actors before they were hugely famous. I mean, like, in those movies, like, it's such a, you know, just, it's such a, you go back and watch those movies, it's such a deep bench, every single one, you know? So a lot of great ones to choose from if you were to do that, but not doing it.
Then I guess what
I'm over to your house, Guy, and stop you.
I can feel your hands around my throat. Just as soon as the question was asked, I'm like, yeah, no, this is.
I'm sorry I cut you off, by the way. That's how dangerous I thought that question might be.
Oh, no. It was probably best that you did. It was ready to slip out. And then
it was not even.
Now I've got the scene from Child's Play 3 stuck in my head now in the end. I am curious that, you know, kind of to move away from Scream, you know, I think just at least the past year or two has been really great in horror. I'm curious what project just really excited you, or were you, you know, you enjoyed seeing either on the screen or screeners or however.
Oh, other movies?
Mm-hmm.
Well, part of the whole family, because we have a social group, many of which are other writers. Orphan First Kill that just came out was such a treat. And Jamie grew up with the writer, David Coggeshall, and we both know David Leslie Johnson very, very well.
Really well.
Who wrote the first one and then produced this one. What a treat. We all saw that together in the theater on opening day, and it just brought the house down. We were just like, this is so fun. Everyone was just on board. It was such a roller coaster. The twist was, you know, so smart. And
my jaw was on the floor.
Mine too. I hadn't read the script for whatever reason. I think it was pretty pretentious. Yeah, Jamie hadn't either.
No, they were like, wait for the movie. Yeah, because they were very pretty, you know.
Ooh. And I just didn't know what to expect. And it was just like, oh, wow, that was so smart. So hats off to our friends, David.
Yeah, that movie's so great. And it's also, it's what's so amazing to me about it is literally it took, there's so many people who walked into watching that going, why would they make another one? And came out of it going, I want a third one right now. Yeah. Like, It's yeah. so just it works on every level. It was so wonderful and so much and so joyously evil, and you know, it just it was great.
Yeah. And then another that's you could argue it's not a straight horror, but I would probably argue against it. Prey. I know Jamie and I both were blown away by Prey.
Oh my god, so good. Oh,
it was just I love Dan Trachtenberg. I love 10 Cloverfield Lane. And so I was excited for it just from that. And I hadn't watched any trailers intentionally, so I could go in pretty blind. I knew the premise. I knew the time period. But, you know, again, that was a really, really good and fun movie.
Agreed. That was, that was a game changer. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it's like, this is how you do an unexpected entry in a franchise. You know, this is the new gold standard for like how you can reboot a franchise in a really cool and unexpected way that feels right. But you know, you never would have thought of it on your own. And then you're like, oh, well, yeah, the world is so much bigger than what we've seen. It doesn't have to be present day. You can go anywhere. You can set up anything. So really love that one.
It was so, it's just that it was great. Simple storytelling. And I don't mean simple like it wasn't hard to do, but I mean just stripped down, wonderful, basic, you know, and made the Predator scary again. Sort of the same thing we wanted to try and do with Ghostface is like, I remember seeing the first Predator movie when I was a kid and being terrified. And the trick of that first movie is it's sort of a mystery as well. You don't know what's hunting them. You don't know what's chasing them. Once you reveal that, it's sort of with all the other sequels, it's really hard to kind of put the genie back in the bottle. Cause it's like you watch Predator 2, which is a fun movie, but like your main characters are running around for like an hour being like, what could be doing this? And you're watching that. Well, I know it, the Predator's doing this guy, Danny, it's the Predator. And you know, so it's really hard to reinvent that. And Dan Trachtenberg did such a good, and the writer did such a great job of that. And made me, you know, truly afraid for these characters and created characters that I didn't want to die. I didn't want, you know, the brother is so wonderful in it as well. Like just soup to nuts. What a great movie.
Yeah.
So good.
No complaints. Mira, did you have any before? I had one more question, but I didn't want to take from anybody else.
I guess one last thing, being writers, why do you think that specifically the Scream franchise has such a big LGBT following? What do you think it is about those movies?
I think Kevin kind of baked that in from the get-go. And I think that, if it wasn't completely on the surface, it was always there. And we respected that. And having Kevin's perspective as we were doing 5 was very, very helpful. So I don't know. I mean, specifically, I can't speak to it, but I feel like it's always been part of the DNA. It came out of Kevin, and it's, you know, it's like he describes the first movie as, you know, it's a love story between these two guys and the woman who came between them. And that makes a lot of sense. And we kind of just took that to heart and we're like, okay, we have a representation with the Mindy character, and there's some other ambiguous relationships in the film. And, you know, we want to represent the real world and be very inclusive. And I guess that's kind of just what's on our minds and in our hearts with this franchise.
Well, if you need a drag, Gail Weathers for a sequel, I'll be available.
There you go.
I have a comment on the outfit, which is perfectly Gail.
and the bangs are.
Yeah, justice. I mean, it's iconic.
I guess, I will finish then with, you know, what do you guys have next that you can talk about? Or that I know some things have been released or announced, which I'm really happy about, but what's next for you guys?
A few things that haven't been announced, unfortunately. So you mentioned Final Destination, currently in the writing process on that. And there's some exciting things happening that haven't been announced, so I can't say, unfortunately, but another person in our little group that I mentioned, that David and David are part of, David Cockershall's wife, Lori, it's a writing family, a horror writing family. And Lori and I are co-writing the Final Destination script right now. And I literally can say nothing about that other than that it's been a thrill and a treat, and it's another franchise that's really close to my heart, and a premise that is just never going to get old, and it's always got legs, and it's so smart. And John Watts, director of the Spider-Man trilogy and Cop Car, is producing, and this came from an original idea of his that is brilliant, and it puts a new spin on the whole franchise that everyone's really, really excited about. Oof.
Ooh, yeah. Well, please don't make me terrified of everyday objects. It makes
that's the point.
Previous ones that's the whole make point. My life hell.
We have to. I apologize in advance because that is our goal.
Yeah,
specifically you too.
I still will not drive behind logging trucks to
the amount of lives saved from that.
Sunbeds.
Yep.
Nope, not happening.
And then to further sort of, you know, familyize the whole thing, because we really are sort of this. This family is Laurie Evans Taylor, whose guy's co-writer on Final Destination, also wrote and directed a movie that I produced that's coming out called Bed Rest, which stars Melissa Barrera from Scream, which is this small sort of horror movie about a woman who is placed upon bed rest, and it turns out she's in a haunted house. So, you know, if you ever want to know why you can't leave the house, that's why you can't leave the house. But it's great. Laurie directed it. It should be out later this year. And she did a wonderful job of it. And so super, super excited about that.
That sounds amazing and awful. Like terrifying. Exactly. Oh my God. Oh,
you're shooting for amazing.
I don't need bed rest made scary. Thank you. No, I like it. I just want to stay in bed.
That's right. Fair enough.
Well, I again, I just want to say thank you to both of you for coming on, just shooting the shit with us, talking Scream 5, a little Scream 6, and everything else. It really means a lot to us. I'm just really excited. Can't wait for the next Scream project. And I just can't wait for more horror, honestly. That's, you know, what I'm here for. So, and I just want to say thank you to Liam for joining, and thank you to Mara for joining. And until next time. Bye, everyone.
Thank you so
Thank
much
you for having us. We had a great time.
You have been listening to the Horror Hour. See you next time.